I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Scott Wilper. He's Executive Director of the New Mexico Land Conservancy, and joining us by telephone, Jim Winder. He is a rancher, he's co-founder of the Kivira Coalition, and he's going to be honored in a celebration of land conservation in New Mexico that is coming up this coming Friday at the Farmers Market. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So, Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit about the work of the New Mexico Land Conservancy?
Sure. Well, the New Mexico Land Conservancy is a nonprofit land conservation organization that works throughout the state of New Mexico. We're actually in our 11th year now. We're based here in Santa Fe, but do work all around the state. We had set forth a goal of trying to get 100,000 acres of land under conservation easements in 10 years, and we did accomplish that goal.
Excellent.
Last year, and I think we're actually up to about 120,000 acres now with the current projects that we're working on. But we work primarily with private landowners all around the state to help put conservation easements over their land in order to protect certain conservation values, which can include anything from wildlife habitat to productive ag land to scenic open space, cultural historic resources, recreational areas. So we have a very broad mission. And we're part of a large private land conservation movement that's been around now for about 100 years. A lot of people aren't aware of this, but the land trust movement has been around since the latter part of the 19th century. It kind of started up in the northeast part of the United States when concerned citizens began to be concerned about the loss of open space and special places. And because there's not a lot of public land up in the Northeast, they had to kind of create a new mechanism by which to protect these private lands. And so some of the early land trusts were set up in the Northeast. And the movement has expanded greatly with the creation of some tax deductions at the federal level, which came online in the 1970s. That's when we really started to see the land trust movement grow. And it's continued to grow over the last 35 years. We now have about 1,600 land trusts in the United States. Here in New Mexico, it's still a relatively new movement, but there are a number of organizations, including ours, that do this kind of work. We're the only organization that kind of works at the state level, but there are a number of local trusts. Santa Fe has one, Taos
right.
has one, and then there's some national groups like the Nature Conservancy Trust for Public Land that also do this work. But the main purpose is to protect private land, and the main tool we use is called a conservation easement, which is basically a legal agreement between private landowners and the land trust to restrict subdivision and development in order to protect the conservation values on those properties.
How does it affect the work that so much land in New Mexico is actually public land?
Yeah, that's a good question. About half the land in New Mexico is public and about half is private. And, you know, a lot of important resources are found on private land. I mean, the one that comes to mind immediately is water. I mean, if you look at a map and look at, you know, how our rivers and watersheds are laid out, a lot of the important water resources are on private land. And obviously, water is everything in a desert environment. It's important not only for the wildlife, but also for the livelihood of ranchers and farmers that, you know, depend on their livelihoods from that water.
So when you conserve land, when somebody gives land for conservation, gives conservation easements, what happens to the water rights on that land?
Well, typically, we're trying to tie up as much of the water as we can through the conservation easement. But as with the development rights, which we're negotiating through these easements agreements, we're also negotiating the water. You know, it's not necessarily an all-or-nothing kind of negotiation. In some cases, landowners, you know, choose to conserve their entire properties. In other cases, especially on larger ranches, we may only put a portion of the ranch under an easement, and they may leave certain areas out for future development or for other purposes. And the same goes for the water. I mean, obviously, if we're working on agricultural conservation easements, it's pretty important for us to be able to make sure that there's going to be enough water tied through the easement to make sure that agriculture can still be viable. And the same goes true for many natural habitats, especially riparian and wetland areas where we need to make sure there's enough water.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, if you have the land under conservation easement, but the water rights get taken up somewhere else, you could have the land dry up.
Yes, yes. And especially in these current times when we're seeing, you know, so much drought and evidence of climate change, water becomes even more critical.
We're talking to Scott Wilbur. Let's turn to Jim Winder joining us by phone. So you are a rancher, and you've been doing this for what? Your family's been ranching for many generations, is that right?
Correct. I'm the fourth generation.
And so tell us about your ranch and how you are doing it and how maybe you have broken from traditional or conventional ways of ranching.
I guess it started back in the late 80s and early 90s, and the economics of ranching are just very difficult. Ranching is a mature industry, and it's just very difficult, and we're losing so many ranches because ranchers really can't afford to buy ranches anymore, and so you're seeing ranches being sold for development or for recreational purposes and all. And so I had been not only heavily involved in ranching, but I was also pretty heavily involved in the environmental community with the Nature Conservancy, Sierra Club, and like you mentioned, the Quivira Coalition. And we were working to help ranchers, we're working to help the environment, and then we kept losing land to development. And so I got involved with something we call protective development, where we would do a controlled amount of development on a ranch. We'd buy a ranch, do a development on a portion of it, and then restrict it heavily. And this is where the conservation easements came in, because they were the only way that we could guarantee that a tract of private land would not be developed in the future. And so that's kind of how we got involved in that. And it's worked for us. There was a long time that I didn't know that I would be able to even stay on the ranch myself, much less pass it on to my children. And that situation is much better, thank goodness. By working through the different values that the land has, and then, like I said, conserving things as much as possibly can and leaving the options open for the future generations.
What was your motivation to become really involved in the environmental movement?
Survival, to start with, in all honesty. Back in the late 80s, there was a real threat to public land ranchers, which we are in southern New Mexico. And a lot of environmentalists were really... public opinion was kind of swaying, and I felt a definite threat. And so many of my colleagues in ranching, wanted to fight the environmental community. And I figured there was enough people doing that. I thought, well, I'll try something different and try communicating. And what I found was that we were all really had common goals. We just spoke different languages. And that's where the Quivira Coalition grew out of that. Two conservationists, Courtney White and Barbara Johnson, and I formed that because we were struck by how similar our goals were, but we were talking different languages, me as a rancher and they as environmentalists.
I mean, I think the argument against ranching, particularly on public lands, is that it's not sustainable, that it uses the land in a way that trashes the land. Are you doing, and presumably you and so many people who are involved in the Quivira Coalition are trying to do ranching in a way that actually conserves, sustains, and even to some extent restores the land?
Absolutely. There is the perception that ranching trashes the land. There's a lot of things that have the perception of trashing the land. And what we find, what the science teaches us, is that the effects of any activity depend on the timing, intensity, and frequency of that activity. And so to say grazing is good or bad, we can't really say that unless we know something about the timing, intensity, and frequency of that grazing. And so that's something, again, that the Quivira Coalition is very heavily involved with really a lot of the science coming out of the Hornot Experimental Range down by Las Cruces. And so certain types of grazing that are very carefully timed, careful intensity and frequency, can be beneficial and certainly can be benign, and can avoid I believe, pretty much all of the negative effects of grazing. Grazing is a very natural process, you know, so it's been around for millions and millions of years, so it's not that hard to make it sustainable. Now, there are other things that we apply these same principles of timing, intensity, and frequency to that haven't been around for millions of years, and I'm talking about residential development, but they still apply. If you just go out and do whatever you want on the land without a broader vision, you're going to get into trouble. If you have this myopic view of just being a developer or just being a rancher and failing to see the horizons, then there's going to be problems. But if you have a broader view and you're willing to bend and blend your activity with the land and with other values, you can be surprisingly successful.
Can you talk about some examples, some like specific ways in which that is working?
Well, if we talk about development, I started a company quite a while back. It kind of grew organically out of our ranching, but we would buy a ranch, and then we would do enough development on the property to pay for it. But we did the development in an unusual way, is that we would sell 40 acres, but we would restrict it such is that we retained the grazing rights on 39 acres, and people were allowed to develop only 1 acre, you know, to build a house on 1 acre. And even that house was designed in a way, there were design restrictions that restricted the height, the color, the footprint, this sort of thing. And then the actual location of the house was highly restricted and planned out in advance. And so a lot of these properties you go on and you would never know you're in a development. You'll see a house here and there, but you really don't see a group of houses, or certainly not like we used to in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, where it's just row and row of houses. So you're blending these things in there. And so we were able to do a development that paid for the ranch, allowed us to put a majority of the private land into conservation easement, but still maintain 95% of the open space of the property. So this is the idea of what we're saying is blending things. Is yes, we had development, we had conservation, we had ranching all blended together.
You said a moment ago something interesting, which is that grazing has been around for millions of years. And I think one of the things that's very interesting and fruitful is actually taking one's cues from nature and how does grazing happen in the wild? What does it look like in the wild? And how can we make our herds more like that?
Exactly. And that is the current thought. That's been the thought in grazing for a few decades. And again, that's where the idea of timing, intensity, and frequency comes in. That has come out of studies based on the natural processes of grazing. A lot of these things came from the Serengeti, but a lot of them also from Northern America.
Interesting. We're talking to rancher Jim Winder and Scott Wilbur of the New Mexico Land Conservancy. Now, you are also involved in wind generation, is that correct?
No, not really. We have I've managed a ranch that had some wind farms on it. I'm not doing that anymore. I've got a solar project that's being built on my home ranch, though. So I'm a little more familiar with the solar aspect of things.
Ah, okay. Well, that's what I was wondering. I mean, the reason I'm asking is because I'm wondering how you, I mean, as a person on the ground for many generations, see the future potential of the land, for example, in southern New Mexico, in an era of drought, in an era of warming drought and climate change and the various disruptions that come with that, if it becomes truly less suitable for large-scale grazing, how can the land be used in such a way that really is respectful of the land?
Well, I don't know. I do believe that global warming is occurring, but I don't believe the effects are going to be so huge that they're going to negate something like grazing. What I do think is a much greater driving factor are the economics, are the human uses and human desires from the land. When, you know, way back when in the 1800s, when the first ranchers came out here, they were driven by the economics of it. And so ranching and logging and mining and these sort of things, those were the values that our public put on the land. And then, as I mentioned, in the 70s and 80s, we started seeing conservation as the value that that the outside world was placing on our lands, on our public lands and our private lands even. And so this is, you know, this is why we're having this conversation, because conservation easements and Sierra Club and all these things came about, and again, is an expression of a value. Now our society is expressing a value through tax benefits, that sort of stuff, that is encouraging wind and solar generation, electrical generation on lands in New Mexico. And those are the driving things. And so I guess my point is that as a rancher, I see cows as a lawnmower or a harvesting mechanism. They're harvesting grass or harvesting browse that can't really otherwise be turned into, converted into something that, that people can use. And so we're converting these raw resources into beef. There are things with, we do things with recreational programs. We do conservation things that, that do generate income. And so the now this value on solar and wind is just another value on the land that we really have to address. Even if you don't do solar or wind on your property, you still have to know that that's out there and address it.
Scott Wilbur, so tell us about this event that's happening on Friday, this coming Friday. It's from 6 to 10 at the Santa Fe Farmers Market Pavilion, and you're going to be presenting an award to Jim Winder, and the public is invited.
Yeah, so I mentioned that we are now in our 11th year. Last year we celebrated our 10th anniversary, and it was a very successful event. It was kind of the first time that we were rolling out this conservation award, which we're actually giving in the name of Jane Pacheski, who donated her house and 280 acres of land to us back in 2009 on the south side of Santa Fe. I actually first met Jane when I first came to Santa Fe in 2004, and she was going through a process of estate planning at that time, and was always very interested in land and water conservation. She was very engaged with the comprehensive planning process out in the community college district, and as she saw all of the growth and the development that was occurring out in that part of the county, she wanted to make sure that that wasn't going to happen to her ranch, which she and her husband had established back, in the early 1970s. They were actually the first people on the south side of I-25. They had been living kind of where the current Santa Fe Place Mall is. That was the edge of the city in the 60s. And as they saw the city coming out, they decided they wanted to move out further and bought some land in that area and set up a horse breeding ranch out there. And over the years, Jane continued to get more and more interested in land and water conservation, and so when she decided to do her estate planning, she decided to put the entire property under a conservation easement and then subsequently grant the property to us. And so we've been out there now for 4 years, and we managed to get Jane recognized as a Santa Fe Living Treasure back in 2011, just before she passed away.
Nice.
But we wanted to be able to continue her legacy. And so last year when we celebrated our 10th anniversary, we rolled out this conservation award and gave it to Bill DeBuise last year, kind of recognizing all the good work that he's done with the Valles Caldera and all of the work he's done as a writer. So this year we're celebrating again. We're going to do it at the Santa Fe Farmers Market Pavilion. It should be a great time. It's going to be a Western-themed event. Hampton Sides is going to be making some remarks. We're going to have Sid Masters and the Swing Riders doing some Western music, and then we'll be presenting the award to Jim in recognition for everything that he's done over the last few years, both with us in terms of actually getting land under easement, but with all the other environmental organizations that he's been involved with. We hope everybody who's interested can come on down and join us for this celebration of land conservation on Friday. It'll be from 6 to 10 at the Farmers Market.
And for more information, people can call 505-986-3801. They can also go to nmlandconservancy.org. Jim Winder, when you, I love what you said at the beginning, like you decided that instead of fighting with environmentalists, you were going to communicate with them. How is that communication going? Have you found that the common ground is really leading to fruitful places?
Absolutely. It's ballooned into a huge effort. I remember when we started the Cuvera Coalition way back when, we're pretty lonely. It was an odd thing of ranchers and environmentalists being, getting along. I've got old clippings from New York Times and, LA Times and all these different places. I just thought that was so outrageous. But it's really gotten to be a common thing. And so consensus groups would be a good name for this. And there's just a lot of consensus groups have sprung up around the West and have done really well. The Cuvera Coalition has done very, very well and had a lot of impact. And I think the biggest impact that you can see is that there really is not the rancor that we had before. There are still discussions, and but there's just not the animosity and the fighting that there was in the past. There certainly are some issues that remain out there, like wolf reintroduction, that sort of stuff. But it really has, like I said, just really ballooned and been very successful.
What is your advice to young ranchers today?
I guess the biggest thing is economics, is to understand that you're not just in the cattle business, that we're not Hindus and we don't think that cows are gods, that a cow is just a harvesting mechanism. And you have to understand the values that society places on your resources. And you have to meet those needs of society. And so if society is hungry, you give them beef. If they need electricity, you give them electricity with solar and wind power. But all these things are balanced. And just understanding the underlying values and be a resource manager. Don't see yourself as much as just a rancher, a single-dimension rancher, but be a resource manager. And I think with that kind of attitude, a young person can actually do well in ranching. But it does take an attitude adjustment.
Very interesting. Do you find that you have developed an ethic for the land itself? I mean, we talk so much about this idea, Aldo Leopold and the idea of a land ethic, but the land for its own sake, or not so much?
I don't think I developed it. I certainly respect it. I mean, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. You mentioned Leopold, and there's many others. And so, fortunately, I didn't have to develop that. I mean, Scott and I and the rest of the people that are out and involved in this, we had those people that went before us. We just try to do it. I mean, I guess that's the... I'm not a philosopher. I'm a doer. And so, like I said, I just try to adhere to certain things. But there's certainly the ethic. You know, this land is going to be here a long time after we're all gone. And that humbles you and puts things in perspective.
Scott Wilbur, what are you looking forward to in the next decade of the New Mexico Land Conservancy?
Well, we hope to be able to put a lot more high conservation value land under easement or under some form of protection over the next 25 years. We actually went through a strategic planning process a couple of years ago, and we set out a pretty ambitious goal for ourselves to try to get 1 million acres conserved over the next 25 years. And in order to accomplish a goal like that, I mean, we recognize that it's not something we're going to do all by ourselves, but rather we're going to have to figure out how to work collaboratively in partnership with a wide range of different stakeholders and partners. A lot of the work that we've done up to this point, I would say, has been fairly kind of reactive and opportunistic. Private landowners call us up and tell us about their land and their conservation goals, and it sounds like it's a good fit, we've worked on those projects. But we're kind of recognizing that moving into the future, we need to be a lot more strategic and proactive about how we work around the state. I mean, like all nonprofits, we're a pretty lean, mean operation. There's just basically 5 staff people and then my board that helps get this work done, and that's a pretty small operation for working in the 5th largest state in the union. And we recognize that we're not going to be able to conserve it all. We're not trying to. We really recognize the importance of economic growth in the state, but you know what we want to see happen is smart growth, you know, in a planned and balanced way. For that reason, you know, we work with a wide variety of different kinds of stakeholders. I mean, some of the people that we work with, you know, want to conserve their land for pure conservation purposes and don't want any kind of development, and really want to restrict the kinds of uses that the property could be put to. But, you know, we're also working with farmers and ranchers. We work with conservation developers. So, you know, the point is, you know, we're trying to find that sort of common denominator when we're working with these landowners, you know, and it really is about, you know, conserving the land and meeting the goals of that particular landowner.
Scott Wilbur is executive director of the New Mexico Land Conservancy. Jim Winder is a conservationist and a rancher, and they will once again both be at the event this Friday from 6 to 10 o'clock at the Santa Fe Farmers Market Pavilion, nmlandconservancy.org. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.